This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I've been really confused by the whole Rodriguez things, honestly, guys, for a while now. And, you know, I don't know, you know, why you'd introduce a new pitch when he really hadn't mastered the ones that he had. And when they were right, he was plenty good enough to win games. But there's just something doesn't add up here for me with this young man. And it's been that way for a while now. So I'm just not sure when you're building out a rotation, you know, you can really count on this guy to be your horse, maybe a solid contributor somewhere in your rotation, but certainly not the top of your rotation.
So that's former Rockies GM, now on MLB Network, Dan O'Dowd, talking about the Grayson Rodriguez situation. He seemed confused on many levels. Like,
oh, he was.
Yeah, like he, from the introducing a new pitch, the fact the kid can't stay healthy, saying he's going to be your horse when he hasn't proven it at any level, et cetera.
And saying that in the face of allowing Corbin Burns to walk with his 200 innings, 200 quality innings, and putting up no real fight to add anybody beyond number three and number four starters in his stead, and talking up this young man who'd never pitched over 125 innings at any level in his life. Yeah, he was utterly befuddled by a lot of the Orioles' handling of this situation. And look, he works for the league. He's, you know, a league-owned entity. There's always a certain line that you're not going to want to cross in terms of calling out another organization, particularly for something as sensitive as their handling of a young top-flight pitcher. But everything about this, and we talked about a lot of it before the Grayson injury, seemed to be piling on, seemed to be asking too much, seemed to be doing too much. And when in the face of this, he has a couple of hiccups at the start of the Grapefruit League season, why he ever gets on that mound in Fort Myers, and we'll probably never know the truth because you're not going to get many answers or real answers out of anybody over there about something like this. But there's a lot of people in this industry, in the media, in other front offices, who were looking quizzically at how the Orioles handled the Bradish, the Batista, and the Rodriguez situations.
And for good reason. But even taking those situations out of it and going back a couple weeks prior to Grayson going down, to head into spring training and talk him up as the ace, talk him up as being the guy, knowing his injury history, I just think was extremely short-sighted to put all the pressure on this young guy that we're still waiting to see take the next step. We heard Ben McDonald on with us Friday as well, where that's the next step, where it's hitting the post consistently, 32 starts in a season. We haven't seen that yet from Grayson Rodriguez, and now we already see him banged up, and he's not going to begin the year healthy.
Well, he wasn't the only one that was curious about this whole Grayson Rodriguez situation. Former Orioles and Braves pitching coach Leo Mazzoni joined the show last week, and he talked about putting a lot on Grayson's plate.
Well, I think that recipe is the worst recipe you can give them. Because why do you have to develop a sweeper when you're having success, right? Before
yes.
he got hurt, he's pitching
yes.
good. Well, then leave him the hell alone. Because as soon as you start to tweak a delivery in order to avoid not hurting something else, you've raised the risk of hurting something else because you're not throwing the same. You know, it's like a pitcher that has tired legs. You know, once he's tired, he can get into bad habits. Or you say, well, I got to change this or change that, and we're going to add a sweeper. You know what a sweeper is? It's an off-speed curveball, for Christ's sake. But anyway, you know, you add a sweeper, as they call it now, you know, instead of a change of speeds breaking ball. And what happens is you lose what natural mechanics you had to begin with.
Mm.
If you throw harder than you can, you lose the natural mechanics. If you try to look, there's nothing wrong with spin. I understand that spin rates, location, fastballs, but somebody better get behind him and say, look, here's the pitches that you have. You've always had success. We're going to keep everything you got. We don't need to add or subtract anything. We don't need to adjust anything. All we need to do is control the effort on your pitches. The greatest teacher a pitcher has is innings pitched. And in the minor leagues, the most you've ever gone is five. You know why I got to laugh? Because now you're in spring training and they want to stretch him out because he's a starter. Stretch him out to what? Four and a third? Five?
That's Leo.
Don't you cut Leo off.
Is he done? Leo had a lot to say.
He said sweeper with such disdain and disgust.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, I chuckle.
So he's a former pitching coach, had a lot of success as a pitching coach. Dan O'Dowd had success as a GM. We did talk to Ben McDonald as well, but the audio was terrible when we talked to Ben. But
Ben said, I'm like, they're not going to have him start trying to throw a sweeper again whenever he does come back, right? And mm-hmm. Ben said he suspects not, at least not for some period of time. But who knows? Who knows? I do think less is more, and we can talk about Leo being a dinosaur or whatever, or from another era, and some of that's true, but kinesiology, the science of the rotator cuff and of the elbow and of the arm and best pitching practices, you know, a lot of that stuff worked really well for a long time. And we worried about Grayson's fastball and wasting too many fastballs. And to Leo's point, trying to have Grayson harness the fastball and be impeccable with fastball command at 93 to 95 when you don't have 98 to 99 is probably more important for him than picking up another pitch. Really getting the touch on that changeup to make it the plus-plus pitch that it was throughout his minor league career probably makes more sense than tweaking the delivery to try to avoid another lat issue and pick up a different breaking ball at the same time. But they also keep switching out their pitching people. So I guess you bring in new people, they're going to have new ideas and they're going to want to change things up, right? Because that's how you kind of justify your existence. Like, you're not just going to keep doing what you were doing. So, yeah, I think the Orioles better be circumspect and introspective about their role in the inability to handle these pitchers in a way that they can hit the post.
You got to dial both of them back. To do both of them, to change the delivery and to add the breaking ball, you got to go back to square zero. Square one.
I'm with you, bud.
You got to go back to where you were heading into spring training with this. You can't tempt fate when he does come back, and who knows how he's going to even feel at that point, but you need to take that off his plate.
For what it's worth, he's scheduled to have a catch tomorrow. So I guess that includes
And they're
throwing.
Scheduled to play real baseball in how many days?
10.
Yeah.
10 days. 10 days.
Clock.
And this kid has had, what, two outings? I mean,
two.
One full outing, and I'm using full outing because I guess he went the full two innings he was supposed to go.
Mm-hmm. And the velo was down on that one.
Yeah.
But we don't have any StatCast data on that one.
Right. But we do from Fort Myers.
Yes, we do. Yes.
It wasn't good.
No. I guess good news, Gunnar Henderson and Jorge Mateo seem to be ramping things up, though, on the flip side.
Yeah, I There seems to be this movement for Gunnar now to start opening day. I don't know, man. I guess if you're able to play him three straight, I mean, what, a half game and then two straight full games before they go and get him enough at-bats and things in that regard, maybe. I don't know what the rush is.
Mateo is gunning for opening day, too.
They're saying it's not going to happen. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. And in a topic we'll discuss at more length tomorrow, because there's a lot to get to today.
Yeah.
Suarez is basically fully stretched out.
Yep. And looking good.
And looking good. And I'm not sure they're going to move off of that.
No, they don't like to be doing things they don't want to do, Jason. They do. They think he's a starter.
Povich has got options, so that's not a problem.
Yes, yes.
And we did get more injury news. Rock Kabako tweeted this out earlier that Kobe Mayo was hit with a 96 mile per hour.
It happened like two minutes ago.
And then just got pulled from the game.
Yeah, it looked like he was in a lot of pain. It, like one of those inside pitches driven on the hand. It was not good. Not good at all. Hey, coming up next, we continue talking about Orioles, and let's look to the bullpen. And the good, Felix Bautista, and then the bad, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and it's bad. We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
12th pitch of the at-bat coming up. And driven to right field. What an at-bat for Jack Sawinski to bring home a pair. Who knows what the Pirates are thinking, but that could be a defining AB. That's a big league reliever in Sir Anthony Dominguez, who could not put Sawinski away, and he delivers a two-run single to right.
Sportsnet Pittsburgh with the call. And after Sir Anthony Dominguez's last outing, he this spring has an ERA of 23.14, a whip of 4.07.
That's not good, Bob.
He has given up 12 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings, four home runs.
How about 14 hits in 4 2/3 innings pitched?
He's been incredibly hittable. I think that's the understatement of the year.
So you know me. I didn't like the guy when they got him. What's your level of concern? This is a guy who had a 6 ERA in September last year. This is a guy who is now the closer, de facto closer number two to Bautista, who isn't going to pitch consecutive days and isn't going to pitch more than an inning, at least not for the foreseeable future. And he's a guy who they're paying real money to, who the Phillies couldn't wait to get off their roster as a salary dump.
And Ken's been saying this, and I agree, where if they would have went out and got legit closer insurance, and I'm not talking about an Andrew Kittredge who's going to miss the next couple of months, and they bumped him down in the order where he's not seeing all of these high leverage situations consistently, I'd feel a lot more confident than I am now where he is going to be de facto closer 1A because Felix isn't going to be able to close back-to-back games.
And we're picking up where we left off again, which was September. In October, he had a whip of 2. As a high leverage reliever, he had a whip of 2, and he had an ERA of 5.87. Last year for the season as an Oriole, he had a FIP of 5.33. It's fielding independent pitching. That's a problem for any reliever, let alone one you think might could get the last three outs of the game. And he gave up 2.4 home runs per 9 innings pitched as an Oriole. He also gave up 20 hits in 22 2/3 innings.
Yeah, I'm not.
As an Oriole.
I like the idea of him as a lower leverage guy, sixth inning kind of guy. I am frightened about what he's going to look like coming into a game in the ninth inning, which is what it looks like is going to happen on those days that Felix can't go. I am scared because he looked everything coming off hard off the bat. These aren't bleeders and bloopers. These are extra base hits and moonshots. And again, this goes back to what we were discussing during the dead of winter about like going to get real bullpen guys to add to this mix. And they chose not to. And the one addition they made, Kittredge, he'll be out probably until around the All-Star break. And even then, he's not a legit closer insurance guy. I have to question what they've done here. But no, if you're asking me how I feel about this, I'm scared.
And what did they do to the dimensions of the ballpark?
They made him smaller.
And this guy gives up a ton of bombs to the power alley.
Yep. Yeah, he does.
And lefties destroy him. 6 home runs on 100 at-bats against lefties as an Oriole last year. Have they changed anything in right field?
It's the same.
And in the AL East, which he only had to go through a little bit of last year, how do them ballparks look in the AL East? Those right field porches in the AL East, how do those?
Well, Fenway kind of juts out, but yeah.
Could be a problem.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell Tampa looks like.
That's true. It's a minor league park, so it's probably not huge.
Yeah,
probably
play
doesn't
Steinbrenner
play like
Field.
Polo Grounds.
Yeah.
I mean, and who stepped up in the in like just because I'll be honest, I haven't watched these games as religiously as I might have in years past. Who are the great success stories that they're talking up out of the bullpen right now? The guys coming out of nowhere.
Matty B. Matty Bowman.
Are they
Brian
still?
Baker, the grip with the changeup.
Baker.
Baker okay. looked good until he didn't.
I just saw him get three home runs. I did see that.
He did look good until he didn't. Greg Soto.
Well, I just think how we're viewing this bullpen has definitely changed significantly over the past couple of weeks because of the injuries, because of Brandon Hyde, last week, not even giving total assurances that Felix is going to be ready for opening day. Baker, you can't quit him at this point and not having the options. He's going to make the club because of Kittredge's injury. I think the view of the bullpen definitely is taking
it. Well, famous waiver claim Thad Ward has an 11 ERA, and he's given up three home runs and two-thirds.
We still will have them sneaking through waivers.
It's probably not him. I'm interested in Rosny Contreras' arm, but not right now. He's given up three home runs and seven innings pitched.
Yeah, so, he started
like,
today.
I don't think that's the success story.
Zach Fruit?
Zach Fruit's no. First of all, Zach Fruit should be kept as a starter, and Zach Fruit's gonna be at Bowie.
Struck out four
I'm talking about the success stories from within
that can help
that are gonna help the bullpen. Who can fill the void? Brandon Young, how's that looking?
Mm-hmm. Who's this year's Albert Suarez?
I mean, I'm missing somebody. I don't think I am. You know, they've been talking about Luis
Suarez.
Gonzalez before. They got him out of here fast this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got all this depth and all this stuff. Okay.
Let's switch to some good news, though, because it's not all bad news. But Felix Bautista looked good in his last outing, and his velocity is ticking up.
Yeah, that seemed much more like him. All the way around, just sort of the velocity, the shapes, the movement. I think even the confidence, and that's to be expected. The way they talked about him after that game was markedly and noticeably different. I just don't know. Right, you're probably playing like a really challenging game of like pushing him enough to know he's ready and not pushing him too much that something goes a little awry in games that don't matter. I mean, they've got, seven, eight games left? Well, I'm thinking down there. Then they've got the game at Nats Park, right? DC. So whatever it is, maybe it's eight or nine. You throw split squads in there. It's a little bit more. Does he pitch every third day from here on out? And if that goes well, is it all systems go opening day? I wonder
what's
if
he
that's
up to,
the plan.
Is he up to four?
I think it's four now.
And they said if they got him to six or seven.
Yeah, they want to get seven.
And then they'd probably, and we got 10 days until opening day. He's got a shot. He's got a shot.
I mean, it's four innings pitch, though. I mean, it's not a lot.
No.
No, and I think, you still need to have temperate expectations with him. I mean, I don't expect him to be that dominant guy that we saw August 2023 prior to him going down with the injury, at least out of the gate. Like, it's going to take some time.
If you're thinking that Felix Bautista is going to immediately be Felix Bautista, then you're delusional. He's coming off a Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Nobody's right away.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a reboot for him. Touch, feel, what sort of level of initial discomfort is to be expected? What's too much? How in tune with his body is he? How much are they communicating with him?
Yeah.
Every day, early in the day, late in the day, in the pen. I mean, they're going to have to be incredibly diligent and stay on top of this the first 6 weeks of the season in particular. I'm sure they have a plan. I expect that they will stick to their word about his usage, but that makes the Kittredge injury and this Dominguez situation and Soto being just a guy at best.
Well, and their inactivity.
They didn't want to Cologne. They knew better. We'll see what he's like with the Twins.
He hasn't. He's been getting hit. He's been getting hit this spring. I did do a little dive on Twitter over the weekend. I saw
right. Webb was another guy who was really good for them. Yeah. Okay. I just haven't seen like a whole lot of the dude who was throwing 102 6 weeks ago. You know what I mean? Like there was a lot of buzz about a lot of there's not even a Wanderson Charles of this camp that I can find.
Oh man, I miss him.
Charles, I think actually it's Charles.
They both work.
So I'm just saying there's that. Maybe they're keeping that guy really under wraps.
Hiding him?
Trying to sneak him through. I mean,
and maybe it is. You know, maybe it's Matt Bowman. Maybe it is.
Danny Coulomb's got a 7 ERA this spring, which is compared to Sir Anthony Dominguez. That's Cy Young stuff.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
Real quick.
He would love a 7 ERA. Coming up next, Terps, they know their draw. They know their opponent. They know where they're going. Time for a six-pack. Our six biggest concerns for Maryland basketball. Next here on The Fan. Six-pack time, and six-pack sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Come in and try the Good Feet feeling today. Comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief at the Good Feet Store. Go to goodfeet.com. Terps know their draw, so it's time for the six-pack of biggest concerns facing the Terps. And Beltway Ben, let's get started.
Number six.
I put travel at six. I am going to feel like they learned from going out west earlier this year. They will be able to handle it better this time. Plus, it's much more important than when they were out in Seattle and Eugene, Oregon earlier this year. But I got travel at six.
I kind of focused on things that are endemic to them, so I left the draw and travel out. But I think those things are always imperative, and I think they got screwed. They got screwed there, but there's nothing they can do about that.
No.
The things I focused on are things hopefully they can improve on. I put this at six because I don't think it's as big of a deal in the tournament with as much time between games and with as much time to prepare. And frankly, with their starters not having to play a whole lot in the conference tournament, not as much as we thought because they only played two games. And the starters didn't play that much in the first because they blew out Illinois. But it's the lack of bench scoring I put at six. They can get minutes from the bench, but if because of foul trouble they actually need scoring from the bench, that's a problem.
Number five.
I said it before, I'll say it again. I don't trust any backup point guard on this team. DHS, I don't know. I don't think who's going to – like, he's where the Cowboy used to be. I'll believe he's going to make a basket when I see it with my own eyes.
He can't finish.
He can't finish a layup right now, that poor kid. And I think Young, in a situation like this, season on the line, if he has to come in for more than a minute here or there, I don't trust anybody on this team on the ball. I mean, I might trust Queen, second most, to Gillespie. Like, that could turn out to be a big deal in a tournament setting. And there's no backup point guard for me.
My five is, we've seen this happen numerous times. We saw it against Marquette. We've seen it in other big games. They get overhyped for a game, and then they come out, and they're sloppy as hell. And that is a concern, a legitimate concern for me for Friday, is they come out and they're throwing the ball all over the damn place and they get themselves behind because they're playing sloppy ball. So the ability to play clean basketball, that's at five for me.
Number four.
Coming off Michigan, effort on the glass. Like this was, Derek Queen was a master offensively. His effort on the glass was not good. Juju Reese, not good. And then the guards didn't help. And even Coach Willard said so after the game. The guards need to help with the boards. They need to have more concerted effort on the boards.
Yeah, I've got a couple things a little higher than you. My four is the slow, disjointed starts after extreme time off. Again, they're going to not play again for almost another week. Right, they last played on a Saturday afternoon. They're now going to play on a Friday. If they take care of business there, it's going to be 5 days off before they play Florida. We've seen them come out and have really disconnected, choppy offensive, no rhythm, guys not seeing the ball who had been hot. That's been an issue for them with the time off, and I hope it's not again.
Yeah, I'll go Jason early. Got to have the bench in there, and it kind of goes right into your five. If Gillespie ended up picking up early fouls and you had to go to the backup
bench is coming.
All right. That's why we have a second half.
It's our six-pack of Terps concerns, and Beltway Ben, let's continue.
Number three.
I've got the offensive glass at three, and if you just look at the Terps' raw rebounding totals, like they're a good rebounding team, and like overall, because they've had a size mismatch in a lot of these games, or they face teams when they're down a big, which has happened several times, it's worked in their favor. But the Michigan State game, the Michigan game, the Washington game, like the Oregon game, there's been parts of, I mean, I'll go back to the Villanova. How many second chance chances was Villanova getting? Like, that's happened too often, and it's still a bugaboo because it just ended their season getting out-rebounded by 30 against a team that they should have been better than and more athletic than. That's, to me, got to be in the top half of this six-pack.
I know I have a couple a little different than you, but my three is that, hey, Florida's looming. Can they beat them? Sure. But the hottest team in the country just won the SEC tournament, which is the best conference in the country. Their reward if they get through the first weekend is Florida. That's concerning. I don't love that.
Number two.
Two is foul trouble and no depth. Like, they... Jordan Geronimo is giving them some decent minutes.
He's playing his ass off.
Yeah, but beyond that, they're getting nothing off the bench.
Kapari's, not on a complete... Moe Carton anymore.
No, he's there. He scored against Illinois, which was nice to see for the first time in forever. But yeah, if they have a guy get into foul trouble, who's picking up the slack?
Oh, it's bench scoring is... They can get minutes. I don't know how much bench scoring they're getting. My two is they let lesser teams dictate tempo, flow, and pace too often. And it just happened again against Michigan. And this team needs to get their legs under them. They need to be willing to press. Some of it's on Willard, and I think he could turn up the defensive pressure earlier in some of these games than he has. Again, especially against teams that aren't as talented in the backcourt. I thought he could have started pressing Michigan, who turns it over all the time, earlier in that game before he did it out of desperation. And I think they tend to be a better offense when they are doing those things and creating turnovers, and they're able to hit the transition threes. Like, if another team wants to walk it up the court and make it a half-court game, we got to try to do some things to mix that up and to make them play catch-up with us, because that can be a recipe for disaster in these one-and-dones.
Number one.
I mean, close and late. It's got to be better. It hasn't been better. The other team's point guard can't be better than our point guard in a two-point game with 90 seconds to play. And, you know, at a certain point, it becomes like... not a quirk or not a one-off. It becomes part of your brand. And, I mean, the Northwestern game, what almost happened in Nebraska at home, the Ohio State game, the Michigan State game at home, now this Michigan game, like, they're not good winning close games.
Their last four losses have been at the buzzer. Can they win a close game? Shout out Mike Elias. Are the basketball gods going to be in their favor in this NCAA tournament? Because quite frankly, in their last four losses, when they have a chance, they get it ripped out of their hearts.
That's a big W for the Ginger Gorilla.
You like basketball gods?
I think basketball gods, that put you over the top. Yes. But no, I think those are my one and two. It'd be the late and close situations, which we'll get into more during TMI. But the foul try, it can happen at any time. We know Julian's history at Seldon Miguel. It happened with him early against Michigan State. If Gillespie did, going to your five, that's a big concern.
Yeah, if Gillespie has a game, what was the game? Was it Washington?
Washington.
If he has a game like that in the tournament, they could lose Friday.
Yeah.
If he has a game like Saturday on Friday, they could lose.
I didn't think he was terrible. He had 10 points, 9 assists. Like, I didn't think he was terrible.
I didn't think he was terrible, but the other team's point guard was a lot better than him in the last couple minutes.
He hit big shots. That's for damn sure. Coming up, by the way, Maryland plays Grand Canyon on Friday. Pregame coverage 3:30. Tip at 4:30. You can hear that game right here on 105.7 The Fan. And we know where Maryland is, and that's because we know the entire bracket. Time for some one shining moment. We take our first look at this bracket. Who do we like? What upsets are we looking at? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan. Some find this hokey. I love this damn song at the end.
It's
of
It's hokey.
Yeah, I'm not shocked you were going to go that way on there. But March Madness is back. The tournament starts in earnest on Thursday, though we got the first four games.
I think it actually starts in Dayton.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was going to say the first four are Tuesday, Wednesday. But
made a joke.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't start in earnest. It starts in
Dayton. Oh, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, man. I think
I guarantee you there's a town in Ohio called Ernest. I bet there's an Ernest.
Ohio? Yeah, Ernest, Ohio.
I'm going to say there is.
I bet you there is, Bone. Included in Ernest, in North Carolina there in Dayton? This
controversially so.
Yeah. Like how the hell they got in the tournament? Well here, I can tell
yeah,
you. But.
Yeah. Though their AD, who has a bonus tied to the performance of the athletic program.
$104,000.
There you go. Dollars. Pretty big town. I knew it. Yeah. So it's in Dayton, not Ernest, Ohio. He's actually the head of this committee of human beings who, let me explain it to you. They all work for these schools and conferences, and they all have money and bonuses and career achievements tied to this. These are not independent third parties who just do this because they're bracketologists paid by media companies. These aren't algorithms. They go behind closed doors. They start talking for weeks, guys. They have all kinds of private consultations. They have vested stakes in this. It is highly political, and that's why Carolina is in. Oh, yeah. And now that this has become a big story, what do you think the ratings are going to be like for this game, which is also how these people make their money?
Yeah. Well, Carolina is a big brand in college basketball.
There you go. And yeah. Now Carolina doesn't belong.
I just think it's so disgusting. The fact you're always quad one wins. How many quad one wins? When you're 1-12 in quad one games, how the hell is that a good enough resume to make the NCAA tournament?
And the fact that the reasoning for West Virginia not getting in was because they had a guy hurt who hadn't played all year, really. Like, he didn't play, as far as I can remember, he didn't play in a Big 12 game. And yet,
they were 6-10 in quad one.
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
Yeah. And that kid didn't play, but yet.
And if we're going to factor in injuries, how about the fact that Duke was out without two of their four best players and still were up by 25 on Kakalaka in their own backyard?
Yeah. Kakalaka almost beat them Friday, though.
Kakalaka got embarrassed by them.
Yes.
Twice in the ACC.
Ben, you have something to say?
No, that Friday game, officiating never screws Duke. That was exactly what happened.
Well, I don't know. I just said to him off the air, I go, I don't know how Carolina came back, but they were back in that game.
You don't know how Carolina. They're trying to get them in the tournament.
Yeah, I get it.
Who are the officials paid by?
No, I get it.
ACC. Who is the second most blue blood of all ACC schools? Who is firmly
they might be,
on
they
the
might be the number
might
one.
Be the number one.
Yeah.
Who's firmly on the bubble with their AD in charge of the committee to decide the 68 teams?
Hey, he wasn't in the room during the discussion, Jason.
Yeah, he left the room, Jason. He left
the room. Do they know where he works? Do they know how his contract works? Hey. Do they all do the same job he does? Therefore, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours?
I'd be willing to bet they know where
how about this?
Where he feels where
did
he
you
lands.
See the one bracketologist who tweeted out 111 different bracketologists and algorithms?
Yes,
all ran different models for the 68 teams.
None had
all 111 had West Virginia in. Yeah. All 111 did not have North Carolina. And you're asking why they're playing in earnest? I mean Dayton, Ohio.
Yes.
Because it's corrupt as hell.
So let's get to the games themselves. Anything, because I know you and Beltway Ben, you got anything you like?
I found myself fading Big Ten teams.
You did that last year, too.
Yeah. I think the 18 that Michigan State was laying, a Bryant team that I've been impressed by, saw with my own eyes against Towson, I've been impressed by all year. Like, I think that's way too... Like, Sparty doesn't score that much. Like, Izzo in the first round against Bryant is going to be trying to beat them by 20? I just don't see it. Bryant's got like four kids, 6'8 or taller, who play real minutes for them. They've got this Earl Timberlake guy who shows up all over the place. They've got a 6'8 point guard who distributes block shots, like, and can shoot the three ball. Like, their transfers are from like St. John's and real schools. They're not from D2 schools. So I thought 18 to Bryant was way too much. I think Purdue's in trouble with High Point. If Purdue tries to beat them 3-for-3, like, all right, if they just want to lay it inside the Kauffman Rent all day, but I don't think that's really what they're going to want to do. And High Point will score on them, and High Point could do some interesting things defensively. And I think I got it at 9. I think it's still out there around 8.
And how are they at 4, Purdue?
You tell me. You tell me. Who's, well, you think it was a computer or a human being?
I think it was a human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's some of what I jumped on. I think New Mexico is going to outright win that game. And I'm telling you, I took 23 with Robert Morris. I think Robert Morris is going to make Alabama sweat into the second half. Like, I think they're going to make that a game.
Beltway Ben, anything you're looking at early?
I mean, he was talking about the Michigan State game, Brian. I like the under, 152.5. I feel like that's way too high. Arkansas plus 4.5 against Kansas. This game is not at Allen. Arkansas's getting Boogie back. I think Arkansas covers that. And then Colorado State minus 2.5. No Hunter for Memphis. Maryland, as long as they can beat Grand Canyon, will play, I think, Colorado State. So I like Colorado State minus 2.5.
Are these games, and you guys are much bigger gamblers than I, but will you have action on a lot of games, do you think, is in these Thursday, Friday windows?
I've made like 6 bets so far. I'm monitoring a couple others.
I'll have a lot, but I mean, the amounts will differ.
No, like right. Some would be sure. Like a taste, yeah.
I wanted to make a comment on the UNC thing. So UNC gets their seed or whatever, you know why. But to seed Louisville 8th, so you're kind of pushing away on the ACC. You're saying the ACC is not very good. You're going to give Louisville an 8, who dominated the ACC, how they did. And then UNC gets in. So, I mean, it's hypocritical. Like, there's no way you can give Louisville an 8 seed, who also beat up on UNC when they played. And it was in January, but they beat up on UNC when they played him. It wasn't really close. Then you give them an 8 seed, make them play Creighton, which anybody who's filling out their bracket, this is the worst 12 o'clock game because it's going to be 50-50. A lot of people have Creighton. A lot of people are going to have Louisville. But to have them as the 8 and then put UNC in, it's just a joke.
I will say this about the play-in games. If you study this, more years than not, somebody who wins a play-in game ends up in the Sweet 16.
Somebody makes a run. Yeah.
I think whoever wins this Texas Xavier game, I had it as a pick'em, so I took 3 points with Texas when it came out. It might be Xavier. I don't know. Whoever wins that game, I think, is going to the Sweet 16.
Right now,
because they play Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Right now, it looks like Xavier, right now, at least in the book I'm looking at, is this 2.5-point favorite. So that thing is, some of the money has gone there. By the way, in the evenings, you can hear Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament right here on 105.7 The Fan, starting tomorrow with the first day of first four games. But coming up next, Ravens. It's been busy. They signed a backup quarterback. They brought in DeAndre Hopkins. They just had Ronnie Stanley's press conference. They picked up the $4 million. The deadline was yesterday for Mark Andrews. We'll talk about all that with Jonas Schaefer, covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner, and he joins us next.